there and welcome to another episode of the Women's Golf Show with Beth Allen and with me, Jenny Falconer. Now, this is the show dedicated entirely to the women's game, and it's fair to say we have a packed show this week. We're going to look back on the year's second major, which is the US Women's Open, after a big week at Pine Needles. Also, we're going to look forward to the fast approaching Curtis Cup, and Iona Stephen meets the seriously talented Mia Baker as she makes her mark in golf. And helping us do all of that this week is a very special guest making a return to the Women's Golf Show. She liked it so much, she has come back for more, but little does she know what she's in for when she faces Beth in par 3, par 4, par 5. Beth, welcome back home.
Thank you. It's so nice to be on the same time zone as you guys.
I know. Well, it makes life easier for us now, because before we'd be like, so what time should we chat? Oh, no, you're in bed then, are you? Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
It's quite nice. And are you still fishing or are you back to golfing?
No fishing yet, but I hope that I can fish soon. But have been playing a fair bit of golf. I played at North Berwick last week, and I was lucky to be on the new yesterday and experience St. Andrews in all its glory leading up to the Open. So it was all very exciting.
It looks like there is a hub of activity. I mean, I follow a lot of people who are in golf or who are golf influencers or who are golf wannabes, and they're all up there. And everyone seems to be playing in St. Andrews, and I'm just insanely jealous.
Well, I know, how many times have you seen pictures of the stands with 150 on them? But it's going to be brilliant. Like, it's already buzzing. I can only imagine what it's going to be like in July. I can't wait.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. I know there's only a few weeks to go. Not long at all. I wonder if our guest today is dreaming of being back home in Scotland. Do you want to do the honours, Beth?
Of course I do. So, originally from Aberdeen, we met this player on the very last episode of the Women's Golf Show in 2021 after she qualified for the LPGA at the grueling Q Series. She's had a strong start to the year, including an appearance in the quarterfinals at the Bank of Hope match play a couple weeks ago. It's Gemma Drybrath.
Yay! Thank you, Beth. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back. It's weird thinking back the last time I was on, because it was obviously after Q Series, and a lot has happened since then.
Yeah, it seems that you've been quite busy. In fact, you just mentioned there, Beth, about the Bank of Hope match play, and I was just watching back some of the clips of it. Oh my goodness, there was a really annoying putt for you that just ended right on the edge of that hole. How annoying was that?
Oh my goodness. So the funny thing was, this was obviously extra holes at the end, so we'd already played that hole, and I'd been in the exact same spot on that green, and I'd whacked it 4 or 5 foot past and missed the putt coming back. So on this putt, I was like, okay, die in the hole. My caddy was like, you know, be careful with this one. So I literally, you know, died in the hole, and it literally was just on the edge and was one roll from going in. So my caddy at the end was like, I wish I hadn't told you that. You might have put it in. I was like, oh. But then she also had a tough up and down to get, so, you know, it wasn't like I needed to go at it and make it. So, but she got it up and down, and we went to the next hole, and I unfortunately lost on the next hole. So it was pretty frustrating.
Oh, you played so well though. But it's, you know, when you see a ball just sit on the edge, instantly you think of that Solheim Cup match when they picked it up, and I was like, it might roll in, it might just fall in. But
you never know.
You never know. You never know. Anyway, it's great to have you back on here as well. Good year then so far.
Yeah, it's been great. Kind of the best start I've had to a season yet. So just excited to see where it goes. And obviously highlight last week as well, playing the US Women's Open for the first time at Pine Needles. So that was great. My family came over for it. I was just thinking back, actually, this is the fifth major I've played, but like 3 of them have been during COVID times. So it was great to have been able to, like, the family come into hospitality and kind of experience that, and a lot more crowds. Because my first Women's British Open at Troon, there was no crowds allowed. So it was just great to, you know, have that experience and just the enormity of it, really.
And I heard the crowds were like massive at Pine Needles, right?
They were huge, yeah. Because, you know, on Thursday is usually the quietest day of any tournament. And even on Thursday, it was massive crowds, even following our group. I mean, we didn't have Nelly Corder in a group or anything. And it was
They're
great to see.
You.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, it's great to see so many people out there, and I think people would travel from all over as well.
Oh, wow. I love it as well that your family are out there. I mean, it must be one of the perks for the family, hey, to go to all these amazing locations and watch golf.
Yeah, I think especially my mum kind of enjoys all that kind of pampering because they were allowed into the hospitality and, you know, we got a courtesy car and kind of drove up with the valet and all this stuff. So she was really enjoying all that pampering. So, yeah, I think they really enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, the USGA definitely knows how to put on an event, don't they? Like, I've only played in 2 US Opens, but geez.
It takes the biscuit for sure.
Is it? I mean, I literally have no... What happens then? Is it from the minute you turn up? Is it like a whole thing?
Yeah, as soon as you get to the airport, you walk out to curbside and there's your car ready. So you just walk into the car. Perfect. And then you obviously drive wherever you're going. And then, yeah, the valet at the course, you just drive in. They take your car for you. You know, hospitality from, you know, first thing in the morning until 8 p.m. So you can literally have 3 meals there if you want. And then there's all the recovery stuff. They've got hyperbaric chamber, which I tried for the first time. They've got Normatec. It was really cool, actually. Have you guys done it?
No. Nope. I've always seen people do it.
I recommend it. It's like an hour treatment. And it's basically, I don't think there's any negatives to it. Like it's, you go under pressure. It's like going 10 meters underwater, I think. And then you get, you know, pure oxygen. It's really good for recovery and all sorts of things. The guy said that he's seen like people with strokes in wheelchairs, like take their first step again. Wow. People with autism, you know, speak their first word. So it's an amazing treatment. But anyway, we kind of use it for, you know, recovery. And then they had the Normatec boots. They had extra masseuses and physios, chiropractors. And the caddies could use them as well. So they were loving life.
Whoa.
My caddy went in 3 times, I think.
Quite right.
Yeah. Take advantage when they've got it. So the caddies get treated well as well, which is great. And there's a bar in hospitality. So my parents were loving that.
Your parents?
The caddies as well, and me at the end when I missed the cut.
I know, but you shouldn't be too disappointed because you were really close, and there are some pretty notable names that also missed the cut, including Yuka Saso, the defending champion. How was your golf all around?
Well, I didn't actually hit the ball very well, so I was actually quite happy I kind of stayed, you know, so close to making the cut. I was kind of getting up and down quite a lot, and so that was great to kind of stay in it, even though I didn't have my best ball striking week. But yeah, I kind of still had a chance towards the end. I had a few birdie putts on the last 3 holes because my caddy said, oh, it might be 3 over. We're kind of seeing that all day. It might be 2, might be 3, but it ended up being 3 and just needed 1 putt to drop. So it was pretty frustrating.
Can I ask, how does it feel when you play at something of that magnitude as well? I mean, is it hard to kind of stay chilled and calm and totally like it's just another game of golf?
It is, because you try to be like that. You're like, oh, I'll play my best golf and I'm relaxed and all that. But it is the US Women's Open. It's the biggest, you know, pot we've ever played for. So it's, you know, it's life-changing money. So yeah, it's kind of hard to kind of, you know, block that all out. But yeah, you have to try. I think I did a pretty good job, but that, you know, there were some nerves there for sure.
Yeah, and you must have been tired after the match play too. Like, that was a long week for you and flying across the country. And
yeah, well, I think I played, 42 holes on the Saturday?
Jeez.
And then, yeah, it was a lot. And then travelled all day Sunday to get, you know, from Vegas to North Carolina. So, and the time difference as well. So, yeah, it was a tiring. That's why I'm taking this week off.
That's what we were discussing, actually, wasn't it, Beth, last time? Mm-hmm. We were wondering if that match play beforehand was actually exhausting and if people would be jet lagged and if it was too much. Was it okay, or are you pleased you did that, or was it a bit too much?
I think I'm pleased I did it because just the position I'm in, I was first reserve that week in Vegas, so I actually didn't think I was going to get in until the night before I got the call. I was glad I did it, but there's a lot of girls that do skip that event just because it's the week before the US Open. The 2 finalists, I don't know how the finalists did this year, but last year I think they both missed the cut. It's just so much golf.
It was. Now, as we've been talking about, actually, it was a big week stateside. Lots of headlines to emerge from the US Women's Open, Beth.
Yes, there are. And of course, It was won comfortably by Australia's Minji Lee. She was four shots clear of her nearest competitor, Mina Harrigay. This is Minji's first U.S. Women's Open title and the second major of her career. She becomes the first Australian to win this major since last week's guest, Kari Webb, in 2001. There are lots of other storylines before and during the championship, but let's start with before. Nelly Korda did make her comeback at the US Open after a three-month layoff. I speculated this might be the case. And
look at her, she's literally going, I told you so. I knew it.
Yes. And of course, Nelly being Nelly finished tied for eighth, which is pretty remarkable for someone who has only recently come back to hitting balls. Michelle Wee West announced in the build-up that she is stepping away from the game at the age of 32. Although we'll discuss in a bit, she's had a long and storied career. She missed the cut at Pine Needles, but it isn't fully farewell to Michelle just yet. She'll play in next year's event at Pebble Beach and understandably isn't using the word retirement. Some very notable rounds over the course of the week, especially Thursday's first round. American Mina Harrigay, 64, marked the second lowest score in the U.S. Open history, a score that was matched by Heejin Choi on Friday. Also of note was the opening round by Swedish amateur Ingrid Lindblad. Her 65 on Thursday was the lowest 18-hole score by an amateur ever at a U.S. Open.
That is impressive, isn't it?
Crazy impressive. Yeah, and playing alongside Annika too. Like, that's amazing.
And Sophie Gustafsson was in her bag.
Yes, yep. I think she's a pretty good caddy.
Yeah, I'd say so. You have experience?
I have, yes. 2.5 years with Sophie, and I can attest she is one of the best. So I can think
How many wins did you
better.
Have with her?
Three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, impressive.
Yeah, yep. So she's pretty good.
Can a caddy make all the difference?
In my case, it made a huge difference. Like with Sophie and all of her experience as a player, you know, former Solheim Cup player and multiple winner, and, you know, like having her on my back gave me lots of confidence just because I could tell she was backing me, and having a player like that back yourself, it does a lot for you mentally. And she'd been in those positions so many times before. And when I got myself there, she really was able to sort of get me over the line. And for somebody as young as Ingrid, that would have been massive because it was a big, huge week for her. And then, of course, playing with Annika, it would have given her some comfort because I think Annika and Sophie are friends and, you know, it just makes things a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. And what can you tell us about Ingrid, actually, Beth?
Well, Ingrid is the second-ranked amateur in the world behind Rose Zhang. She finished third at ANWA, and she's also a member of the women's golf team at Louisiana State University. Apparently, on the first tee, Ingrid was mistakenly given Annika's scorecard.
Oh.
could that be the torch being passed on? I don't know, but that would have been awkward for the person giving out scorecards. I think Annika's pretty... I think we all recognize her.
Oh, that is awkward, isn't it? That's slightly uncomfortable.
So, yeah.
Gemma, can I ask you about your caddy? Who's your caddy? Is it someone you've had for a long time?
Yeah, we've been together 3.5 years now, which is quite a long time in caddy years.
Very.
They're kind of like dog years. but yeah, 3.5 years. It was actually at Q Series 2018. We started working together. So been together since then. His name's Paul Heseldon. He'll appreciate that. Shout out, I'm sure. Beth, I'm sure you know him.
Yes, of course,
but he's
yeah.
He's been on LET. He was started on LET, I think maybe 8 years ago. That might be wrong, but before I came on tour and kind of met him through other, he was caddying for other girls, and yeah, eventually just asked him to work for me. So it's been good.
Well, hello, Paul, when you're listening to this. Nice. Well done.
That.
Well done on your caddying skills with Gemma. Very good here. Is that what you say? That's rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that works.
That works. Okay. Well, there's certainly lots to unpack, I suppose, then. And can we start by discussing Minji Lee? Obviously, I mean, she's in quite good form then, just to put it mildly. She's doing all right off the back of winning the Founders Cup 2 weeks ago. And am I right in saying a scoring line of 67-66, 67-71, which is, yeah, also pretty good.
That's incredible scoring at a US Open. Unbelievable. Yeah. And she just looked like she was in control the entire time.
Yeah, and she was certainly made up with her second major title, as you'll hear here.
I mean, this is pretty special. This is the one that I've always wanted to win since I was a little kid. So it just feels pretty amazing to be able to get it done today. And I just can't believe it.
Talk a little bit about the round today. It looked like you were in control for most of it, but how much were you paying attention? What were you feeling?
I was pretty nervous all day, to be fair. You know, I started good. I had two birdies off the bat, and it was nice just to have that little buffer. I made two bogeys on the front nine as well. And then I didn't hit it that well. I had really good saves, up and downs from a lot of the places. And then, you know, finishing, I had a couple birdies and a couple bogeys. So I think that was enough to, you know, get it done today.
So that's Minji Lee there talking about the importance of all the ups and downs and keeping herself steady on the day. Gemma, do you think, is it fair to say that Minji is one of the best players in the world right now?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Just the way she hits it as well. I think her proximity is something insane. She just hits it so well. And I think the difference has been her putting over the last kind of year or so. She's kind of really improved her putting. I think she's always been a good ball striker, but the putting was maybe the thing that was missing. But yeah, she's figured that out. That's for sure.
Yeah, certainly. Definitely. I mean, she is amazing, isn't she? I mean, how do you kind of suppose lay the foundations for a win like that? Is it just constant practice, constant play? I mean, what do you have to do?
Yeah, I think you just have to be consistent with it. Kind of keep working on everything, really. I'm sure there's certain things in her game. She's maybe her putting, I'm sure, but I'm sure she's working on most things in her game at all times. And just kind of gradually improving. And I'm sure the mental aspect as well has been big for her. Just kind of, you know, staying calm in those situations. She said she was nervous all day, but you just got to learn to kind of deal with that and thrive on it, really. So she's obviously doing it quite well.
Yeah.
Very well.
It must be hard as well, especially if you are kind of like taking the lead. Well, she took the co-lead from the second round, but I suppose it must be quite easy to let nerves get you at that stage as well. And so you'll be kind of trying to battle not feeling the nerves or not feeling the pressure to maintain that lead as well.
Yeah, yeah. You're trying, you know, you get nervous and you're like, oh, well, do I want to be nervous? And it's all this. And then you just can't really think about it too much. You just got to embrace it, I think. I'm sure, Beth, you've been in that position where the nerves come, but you just got to kind of embrace them and bring them on.
Yeah, and there's an element of experience too. You know, when you put yourself in that position over and over and over again, it gets easier. And she's been playing so well, and obviously has the Evian under her belt as her first major. And because she's been in this position before, it must have felt a little bit more comfortable and achievable. But yeah, still no small feat. And especially on the LPGA, it's hard to put yourself in that position week in and week out. And she has done for, you know, over the last year. And it's been really impressive.
And also impressive for Mina Harrigate, who came second, because she's been on the circuit for a while and she hasn't had a win. And so this must have been, you know, really good for her.
100%. Like, Mina's also from California. I grew up playing against her. And her career has been like a roller coaster. She was an unbelievable amateur and then came straight to the pros and did pretty well, then really, really struggled, like pretty openly with her mental health and things like that. And then had an amazing year last year and qualified for the Solheim, which was awesome. But I think this week would mean so much to her. And part of that is the money. Like, we've talked a lot about the direction of the prize funds the last couple of shows, and over $1 million for second place is incredible.
That's like £800,000. That's so much money.
So much money. And it's awesome to see 2 7-figure payments, you know.
What's first prize if that's second prize?
1.8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So pretty incredible stuff. And it'll be life-changing for her. And you know, I'm really pleased for her because I know it's been a long journey.
It must be good for girls in golf now when you're playing at that level to know that you're actually working towards a really decent chunk of cash at the end as well.
Totally. In 2005, my rookie year, I remember it being a massive deal that every LPGA event was $1 million, the entire like purse. So when we got to that point, we were all thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. And now to see two people in the US Women's Open making that is really great, you know, and that's, you know, only 17 years later. I mean, I think the best is yet to come.
Yeah, very good indeed. And Beth, you also mentioned that Michelle Wee West is taking a step. Well, she's not retiring, but she's taking a step sideways. Could we say that? I don't know. What do you say?
I guess. I mean, she's multi-talented and she's had an extraordinary life in golf. Like at age 10, she qualified for the US Amateur. She was the youngest player to play an LPGA event at 12. She's the youngest player to make a cut at a major at 13, and also renowned for playing PGA events while she was still a teenager, especially in Hawaii, her home state. She went on to have a really good career as an adult, of course, 5 wins, including the 2014 Women's Open, the U.S. Women's Open. And I think her impact on women's golf has been huge, like not only because she's a great player, but because I think she's quite, she's just a fun personality. And I think that she is sort of somebody that lots of young people can relate to. She's quite cool. And like I said, she's super talented. She loves cooking. She's very stylish. Like, she just, you know, somebody that has made golf really fun to watch. And because she was so popular as a young person, I think we've all just sort of kept our eye on her over the years.
I know when you talk about her there, you do, because she's done so much, it does sound like she must be, you know, 100, because she's done so much. She's not even that much older than you, Gemma, is she? She's 32.
Yeah, that's right. It's crazy what she's done in that, you know, small space of time.
Would you have watched her growing up? Have you been like watching her career as you've been starting playing golf as well through the years?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like what Beth said, I kind of remember her playing with the men and kind of making all these big statements in women in golf in general. So, you know, she was always the kind of women's golfer that people knew of. You said her name. Yeah, I know her. She's been great for the game. And she still continues to do lots, you know, for the game. She did that, the hoodie. I think she came up with the hoodie, LPGA hoodie last year for the Renee Powell Foundation, which was fantastic success. So I'm sure she'll be coming out with more ideas with that. I know she's still involved with, I think the LPGA have started a diversity group. And I think she's kind of involved in that. So she's still very involved with the tour, which is great. And with the girls, she's all very good friends with a lot of them, so I'm sure she won't be gone fully.
Well, she has said that she's going to be back next year, so she's taking time out, but she's got a little one. She only became a mum in 2020, didn't she? So I imagine there must be an element that you kind of want to go, hang on, I don't want to miss all their childhood as well. So I don't know, listen, me just saying that there must be many reasons why she's kind of taken a little break.
And she's battled with injuries a lot over the years, which is not a big surprise, the amount of golf that she's played. But yeah, and I think that she's talked about burnout a little bit. And of course, as you say, being a mother is really important to her. And I think it all happened so quickly. You know, she got married and then suddenly she had a baby and she has so many other interests. So I think, you know, this is just a pause for her, and we'll see her playing for sure. But she certainly will not be out of the women's game in other ways.
I think as well, so many people, they go and have a break, they clearly miss it and they come rushing back as quickly as they can, don't they? Like, oh,
that's what I'm waiting for.
This August, the world's best players descend on Muirfield for the AIG Women's Open. Witness Anna Nordqvist defend her title as the championship makes its debut on the renowned Scottish links. Book today at aigwomensopen.com.
This week as well, we know Iona, you know Iona Stephen, don't you, Gemma, as well?
Yes,
Iona,
yeah.
She is one of our regulars on the Women's Golf Show. And this week she's caught up with an unbelievably talented girl as part of the Iona Meets series. Now, Mia Baker, someone that I follow on Instagram, actually, she is an influencer, presenter, and now a children's book author. She's making a bit of an impact in golf as well, and she only took up golf in 2019. Since then, she's lobbied some of the biggest brands in golf to redress an imbalance in golf clothing. Have a listen to this.
Well, Mia Baker, it's a treat to speak to you. Golf influencer extraordinaire, First of all, just tell me from the top, Mia, why did you get into golf, and where does the fashion come into it, and where does the actual playing golf come into it?
I mean, I started golf because someone invited me to play golf. I never would have started golf otherwise. I don't think it's a sport you wake up one day and go, oh, I'm going to play golf today. So then I went to hit a golf ball, and I would say I am not awful at sports, but I genuinely don't have any hand-eye coordination. I was like, what is going on? Couldn't hit a ball, air shots all the time. Uh-huh. And it kind of blew my mind. and I don't really like being bad at things either. Uh-huh. And I also know that lots of people would also be bad at it because, I don't know, you know when it's so hard for you, like, I can't be the only person.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of like the idea of doing something that not everyone's amazing at. Mm. Started playing it, thought it was really cool. Mm. And then I went to buy some golf clothes.
Yeah.
Mainly golf shoes, actually.
Yeah.
And I was quite shocked or surprised to find, like, nowhere sold anything for women. We're in England at the time. And I went to loads of pro shops, and there was, like, not a single women's section. And I was like, huh? Is this for real? Mm. And then I went to American Golf, their flagship store in London, thinking I'd find something, and they didn't stock anything for women. So I got in touch with the CEO of American Golf. Turns out they'd pulled all of women's and all of juniors' clothing and equipment from all of their stores across the UK. You can buy it online.
Mental.
This is the back end of 2019.
Right.
So
really not that long ago.
Not long ago at all, just before the pandemic hit. Mm. And yeah, I had a few meetings with America Golf, started working with them. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones who told me to start my Instagram account.
Really?
Yeah, and I was I don't really know. Because I was working in tech. I was working for a genetic testing company, behind the scenes kind of girl, loved working on a computer. Like, yeah. That's a bit of me. And the idea of going in front of a camera, showing me my swing, which was awful. I didn't even know how to hit a ball. And doing something in a whole new industry was really scary and daunting. And I don't know, I just must have had a lot of confidence one day. I was like, let's do it. Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking. Looking back now, it's like the naivety has genuinely what has got me to where I am.
Yeah.
But had I known the journey I'd had to go on to get here,
yeah.
I don't know if I'd have took it on.
Mm. Ignorance is bliss.
It is.
As they say. Mm. So you've done a bit of media. You've been to some serious events, the AIG Women's Open. Mm. You've been to some of the amateur tournaments. You've just casually written a children's book in between all of that. And you continue to be a trailblazer in the Instagram space. So what have been the most enjoyable things for you in the last couple of years? And what's next for Mia Baker?
Most enjoyable, I would say, is the journey. I've come to really enjoy the journey. I was at the beginning very much set on like a goal. I was like, I want to get women's clothing in store. I want to be able to walk into a shop and be able to buy stuff. And like, I did that with American Golf. All their refurbished stores have women's sections, have junior sections. I wanted women to be fronting campaigns. They do that now with American Golf. Adidas Golf now have an Adidas Golf section in their London store, which they've never had before.
Wow.
We've got women and men on their campaigns. I mean, they did do women before, but like, they're just having more of a presence. They've got a unisex range as well, which is unreal.
Incredible.
You know, and for me, like, that was my initial goal. And then I was like, you know what? I actually really like just getting better. I want to be the best I can be. And it's taught me so many lessons on the course that I can bring into everyday life.
Mm.
Things that are opposite to the current culture. For instance, like, everyone's like, you need to think about this, think about that, think about that. But on the golf course, the best thing to do is think about nothing. It's to clear your mind. It's to almost be in like a meditative state where you just let your body do whatever it needs to do. And then you teach yourself acceptance. Wherever your ball lands, that is what it is. And you have to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to mess up your next shot.
Mm.
And you can't change what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep going. And it's like something you can apply to your everyday life as well. It just teaches you so many things. And I've really, really enjoyed that.
Just one final word on anyone that's listening or watching that perhaps is thinking about taking up golf and has been absolutely petrified and is intimidated by all the things that we are dispelling, all these myths. But what would be your word of advice to them?
I would say go to the range. Don't go on the golf course straight away. Like,
yeah.
It took me a year to go on a golf course. People are always like, oh, Mia, you're on Instagram. You should be on the golf course already. Like, man up. I was like, you know what? I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
If you want to go on straight away, good for you, go on. If you want to wait. Like, yeah. Go to the arrange. You can borrow clubs. Go with a friend who has clubs. You can borrow their clubs. And learn to hit a ball. Learn to hit a ball till you feel confident. You're like, you know what? I don't care if I hit a bad shot. Like, I'm just going to hit another one. You need to build that in yourself.
Yeah.
You need to get through that phase of everyone's watching me, everyone's judging me. Like, it's a good life lesson to learn. Like, if you want to become a better person in general, golf is such a good sport to pick up. I think it makes you much more rounded. Like, we meet so many people from so many different walks of life, and you don't often get that in any other sport. Golf does not mean golf course. Golf means playing with a ball and a club wherever you want, however you want.
Yeah. What a wonderful message to finish on. Mia Baker, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Such great chat there. And if you do want to hear the full chat between Iona and Mia, which includes much more, including her week that she caddied for Anne Van Dam at an LET event, well, this is going to be released as a bonus episode of the Women's Golf Show next Tuesday. There you go. It's interesting listening. And when Mia said, you know, she went and did a full year or whatever on the driving range first, I went, my first lessons were on the golf course. And it was good because I wasn't then intimidated by going out on a golf course. And then, of course, I did have to go to the driving range to learn and improve, but going on the golf course for me was really useful. And I've got friends who are learning and are too scared to go on a golf course. I mean, you probably did. You just start on a course, or did you start on ranges, Gemma? What did you do?
I think I was on the range, actually. I think I remember I was only like four, so I think my dad got me like these plastic clubs with a plastic ball, and I'd hit it about 10 yards, walk out, come back and pick up the balls. And but yeah, I remember, but it was very early on you got me on the course as well. So I don't think there's a right or wrong, really.
No.
But I think you're right. There is a almost like my mum's almost scared to go on the golf course because she's worried about what people think. And it's almost nice to get that, you know, off the bat quickly. But I don't think there's a right or wrong. Like, Mia's way worked for her, and I think that's great. You know, getting to know how to even hit the balls is a great start.
Yeah, I mean, everyone starts in different places, absolutely. And well, it's worked for her. Well, whichever way she chose to do it. In fact, she's way better than me, so obviously she's done it the right way. That might be it as well. And we also talk about the influence or culture that is growing with golf. I think it's brilliant that there's so many female influencers now on the scene. We had Jazzy Golfer, Jasmine. She was in our first episode of the new series of the Women's Golf Show. And it's good because it brings new approaches to golf, and everyone presenting golf in new ways and to different audiences as well. We saw, Gemma, that you were poached and stalked a bit by an autograph hunter / influencer recently, Hallie Ledbetter at Pine Needles. She's a good friend of yours, isn't she?
Yeah, a very good friend. We went to IMG Academy in Florida together. We kind of started, well, she was probably there a little bit before me, but we're same age. Kind of graduated together from there and kind of went through our formative years together, you know, through high school. So you kind of bond, you get a special bond, I think, when you do that at that age. So we've kind of obviously kept in touch, and she's still in the golf world. See her from time to time at the women's events. And yeah, so I was signing autographs for these kids, and I got to the end of the line, and there was this girl. She was squatted down with the ball over her head. And eventually realised it was Hallie, so she got me there. So it was very cute to see her there. And that was the first I'd seen her all week, so I knew she was obviously there, and hopefully I was going to catch up with her. So yeah, she did it well.
She's very funny on her Instagram, certainly, where I see her. She's very, very amusing there. Do pros want to work alongside influencers and with content creators? Is it good for you to be working with them? Does it even impact you at all?
I think it's great. Yeah, I think any way you can grow the game is good. So to get kind of your, maybe you and kind of out to different audiences, I think is good, because we obviously probably have different, well, hopefully some of the same followers, but maybe different followers as well. So it's good to kind of grow the game in any way you can, I think.
I agree. I find it interesting. Ever since I've been playing golf since 2018, and ever since I've been playing golf, I've loved spreading the word about it. And obviously, I'm trying to introduce it to people like me who might want to try it, but have been too scared, or I've thought it's not for them. And also, loads of people over the years thought it was something for the fellas as well, you know, and it's really interesting seeing how more and more women are now really keen to give it a go. And I just see through my followers the whole attitude towards golf changing as well for female golfers as well.
Oh no, I think it's really important too to have people like you. And then you could almost argue that Michelle Wee West is an influencer in her own right too, but obviously she's a pro. So it's like really good for people to see, you know, these famous great golfers, but more importantly, people like yourself and Jazzy who can almost be more relatable, and then it's less intimidating for them to start, you know, thinking, oh, if they could do it, then maybe I can do it.
Yeah. Is there a pressure then on golfers as well? I mean, Gemma, do you have to be active on social media? Is that part of it now? Golf's important, but in your downtime, you have to maintain a presence on social?
I feel like you don't have to, but it's almost half expected maybe, but especially for our generation, I guess, it's kind of like, oh, you know, you need to post every week, you know, make sure people know what you're doing and all that. But it does get a bit much. Like sometimes you just want to put it away and just focus on your golf. So it can be a bit distracting. I know some people might have people to kind of do that for them, which would be quite nice. But just, you know, hand it off to someone, take videos of you and kind of post them for you. But
is this where you have to go, Paul?
Yeah, Paul. To be fair, he does take videos for me. He's my photographer and videographer. He does all sorts. That's all part of the caddy, you know, CV. But yeah, so it's it can be tiring, you know, social media. It's kind of time consuming at times. So, but you feel like you should do it and kind of help grow the game and make sure people know what you're doing and how it's going on tour.
Yeah. I mean, Beth, you also, you're busy. You were filming for YouTube this week with Eric Anders Lang?
Yes. So cool. Eric Anders Lang is unique. He's, you know, his kind of perspective on golf isn't, I'd say, I don't know how, not normal. And he likes to tell stories about different things. He has a series called Adventures in Golf, and that is on Scratch's YouTube channel. But he kind of goes to crazy places and does various things. But we did a feature on London Ladies Golf Club last week, which is one of the original ladies only clubs in the world. So he asked me to come along and sort of tell my story about what playing golf is like in Scotland as an American. And it was great fun. I mean, he's super fun to be around and uber creative. So it was unlike anything I'd ever done sort of golf media wise, but I really loved it. And I hope we can do more together because it was definitely a lot of fun and very interesting.
And the other thing Mia was saying in her interview there with Iona was that she used to struggle to find golf clothes she wanted to wear when she first got into golf. I can second that. And I mean, that was when she was 2019, I'm in 2018, and it was really hard to find anything. I remember going to Zara and going, do you think that would work for golf? I mean, I literally, there was nothing, or there were things, but I didn't want to wear them. Didn't want to wear the things that were available. Is that a struggle that you both had as well?
Definitely, yeah. It's just kind of, you know, that feel like you're wearing like your grandma's clothes almost. It's I'm sure they didn't have much to choose from, unfortunately. So it was tough, like even to going into the pro shop, like Mia was saying, there's like very small, maybe she said she saw none, but maybe there might be like two kind of, you know, rows of things that have women's golf stuff. And it's like, well, it's not much choice, is it? And I know some of the girls at my golf club, they're, you know, looking maybe at tennis stuff to look at, to wear tennis skirts or Lululemon. But it's not really golf, you know, golf attire really, but it works. So you might as well, you know, wear it.
If a beginner is looking to start golf, because this is the thing, I mean, you start golf and you don't know what you need, right? And you somehow you might get some clubs or you'll borrow some clubs, but you've still got the issue of what to wear. Beth, what would you recommend someone should get if they're starting out in golf?
Well, I think it's essential to have a hat and something to protect A, your face from the sun, but B, your hair from flying everywhere. And sometimes I think people forget that. In fact, we were just talking about Holly. She just did a PSA on her socials about how important it is to protect yourself from the sun because, you know, melanoma and things like that. And that's so real. So I think it's really important for people, even if they live in Scotland, to wear hats.
Yeah. See, so I can second the whole hat need, but not from protecting from the sun, protecting from the wind and the rain, yes, and just being absolutely freezing. That's the first thing. I was like, big beanie hats just to keep my head warm. I never really had a problem with them, hot weather at all. I was like, it's so refreshing to have some sunshine. And shoes also, that was always, when I started, I was like, what on earth do you wear on a golf course? That was quite a tricky one for me to kind of get my head around too, because it's an investment. You want to make sure it's something you will wear. And I didn't know. I was like, do I need something with big spikes, or what do I need? You don't know when you start.
No, and shoes have come a long way since I turned pro. Oh my gosh, I remember, like, you know, the main option was FootJoy, which is great, but they weren't always, like, I feel like the direction that shoes are going now is more trainery, and I love that. Like, I love walking around, you know, because I obviously don't drive. So when I'm walking to the train station, nobody knows I'm wearing golf shoes. They look like just Nike Air Maxes. And then I turn up on the first sole and people go, oh, are those golf shoes? And they go, yes, they are. And they're very cool, aren't they?
That's it. Gemma, what do you think? What's your must-have pieces of kit?
I like best one, the hat, I think. I think people forget about that. I know when I lived in Florida, I didn't wear a hat when I was, you know, 16, 17, and I regret that. Yeah, it wasn't good.
Typical Scott.
Typical Scott, yeah. I had a fringe back then, so I didn't want to have the hat going to school and stuff, so that was my excuse. But yeah, so I regret that. But anyway, apart from that, I think skorts are a great thing for women's golf. I think they're kind of, you know, very versatile. You know, they've got the shorts underneath, so you don't feel like you're, you know, showing your butt. And they're quite comfortable as well, if you can find the right brands, I think. But yeah, there's lots of nice skorts out there, so you don't have to kind of wear, you know, shorts all the time if you don't want to, or trousers. So you can get the skort out there and get your legs out.
Yeah, there are some really good skorts, I've got to say. Okay, so the Women's Open feels like the start of summer of golf, okay? It's going to be big. And next, Beth, we've got the Curtis Cup, haven't we?
Yes, we do. And it's an event near and dear to our hearts at the Women's Golf Show. This is the amateur match play event between the US and GB and I that gets underway Friday, June 10th. It's taking place at Marion Golf Club near Philadelphia. Team USA is headlined by number one ranked amateur Rose Zhang. There's three new dames on the team that won at Conway last year: Amari Avery, Megha Gaun, and Latanna Stone, all who have had really tremendous years so far. And GB and I sees England's Emily Price replacing Emily Toy, who turned professional this year, and Amelia Williamson is coming in for Annabelle Wilson. So the first 2 days, we see four balls played in the morning and foursomes in the afternoon. And then Sunday, of course, it is singles.
There's a lot of golf. Gemma, I know that you obviously have represented GB in Ireland. Was it 2014?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, so this is a special event to be a part of, isn't it? Why, and what are your memories of it?
It was definitely the highlight of my amateur career. It's just like, as a GB and I or American player, that's kind of like your Solheim Cup almost. It's kind of the thing that you want to play in, you want to qualify for. You kind of gear all your tournaments, all the world ranking points towards that. So it's kind of the thing you want to play, and there's, you know, TV cameras around that you don't usually have, amateur events. So it was definitely at the time the biggest event I'd ever played. And, you know, looking back at the teams, you know, GB and I in America when I was playing, we're pretty much all on tour now. So, it's kind of the future of, you know, women's golf that are playing in these things. So it's great to watch, and you should, you know, look out for these girls going forward as well.
The year you were in, it was at St. Louis that you were.
Yes.
What's it like being like the away team, the ones that have come to visit?
Yeah, it was fun actually, because I think we got to go to a nice trip beforehand. We went to Atlanta Athletic Club to practice and get to know each other. So that was an amazing course to practice at and play at. So that was special. And then, you know, we got to go, you know, around Atlanta together and do all that. So I guess if you were a home team, I never had the home team experience, but I guess you probably wouldn't get that. but maybe you do. But I think it's more like the touristy aspect of it was cool, and a good experience to look back on. And actually, one of the girls, Charlotte Thomas, who I played one of my foursomes match with, we're playing in the Dow team event this year. So we're doing a Curtis Cup throwback. That's one awesome. Of the team events on the LPGA. So that'll be great. And but yeah, just looking back on it, it's just an amazing experience. And actually, to be fair, I think the American fans were very, very nice to us, actually. I think much nicer than it would be in maybe a Ryder Cup or a Solheim. They kind of cheered for us. And I remember I hold a putt on the last green in my singles match, and they all cheered for me. I think we'd actually lost already, so maybe that was why they were still happy for me. But yeah, it was a great moment.
Oh, brilliant. But when this year, the GBNI team, Beth, have you got any intel on how they're feeling now that you're close to home?
Well, I do. My wife is actually a selector for the team, so I know quite a bit about what's going on. And Elaine Ratcliffe was the captain last time as well, and she did a really great job. I know the girls love her. And I think the morale is really high. They were at a baseball game last night in Philadelphia. And as Gemma said, they got a trip earlier in the year to Marion, and Katrina Matthew joined them to sort of, you know, help them and show them the ropes and give, you know, share a wealth of her knowledge, which I'm sure would have been really helpful and encouraging for those girls. So, yeah, and two of them were playing at the Women's Open, Louise Duncan and Annabelle Fuller. Unfortunately, they didn't make the cut, but that just means they're probably really well rested. Rose Zhang obviously played the US Open as well and did make the cut. So who knows? Maybe that is ominous. Yeah. I don't know.
Obviously, we know that the Americans are quite strong at the moment. I'm not saying that we are weak in any way, shape or form. However, can we do it? Can GBNI win? Look, Beth's just going quiet now.
Well, this is obviously a very tricky question for me, being an American and also living here and married to an integral part of the team. is awkward. I think it is. The US team is outrageously strong this year, and you know, Hannah Darling for GBNI is playing some incredible golf, but she's going to need some help. And I'm really hoping that, you know, the experience that the players had from last year is going to help them sort of, you know, get over the fact that they lost at Conway, and hopefully they'll be hungry for revenge. But yes, I do fear America might be a bit too strong.
Okay, right. We don't want to hear from you anymore then. So Gemma. Gemma.
Yeah, I'm confident.
Have you played with anyone that's in the team?
I haven't actually. I spoke to and saw Louise last week at the Women's Open. So I was managed to chat to her, and I know she's had an incredible year as well, you know, finishing so well at Carnoustie last year. So hopefully she can, and I was watching her swing on the range. She's looking great.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're all quite young for me now. So I'm getting a bit old now. I haven't played with any of them, unfortunately.
I love how golf is brilliant because the age range of everyone that plays professionally is so wide as well, isn't it? I mean, it's just brilliant. It must be one of the sports with the widest age range. It really must be.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
I love that about it. It's going to be a good week, and we will no doubt talk about that a lot more in a couple of weeks' time. Right now, though, we have something very important to do. This is Beth's favourite part. Gemma, you will absolutely love it too.
I'm a bit nervous.
Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. So easy. And this is because I have the answers. It's time for par 3, par 4, par 5. Now, this is the Women's Golf Show's cryptic clue guessing game, the hardest game in the world. I have some famous women in golf right in front of me here. And for each one, I have 3 clues to who they are. You have to figure out who they are. It's as simple as that. A par 5 is your easiest option. You will get a 5-word clue. A par 4, you'll get 4 words. Par 3, you'll get 3 words. You call your pars. So if you want to risk the hardest clue, you know, you can go for it. If you want to go with the easier option, maybe less points, but you might be more likely to get it. And you can steal each other's clue as well. So if Beth gets a par 3 wrong, Gemma, you can come in with a par 4 or par 5 and take the points. 3 points par 3, 2 par 4, 1 par 5. And this week, we're going to give you an extra clue for free.
Because,
you know, we're feeling really nice. So bear in mind this, all the women have played in the Curtis Cup. And so to be extra kind, I'm going to tell you whether they're USA or GB and I.
See? Okay.
Makes it super easy this time.
Right. How many holes do we play?
Well, let's just see how many you get first. You get a hole in one or not.
We'll see how we get on.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. Gemma seems to be like the first guest who actually understands the game from the get-go.
I reckon she's been studying. She's been getting ready for this. Okay, what do you want, Gemma? Par three, par four, par five?
I'll go for a four.
Okay. Here we go. This is a USA player.
Okay.
Five Solheim Cup wins.
Okay. Five Solheim Cup wins. This is tough. Stacey Lewis?
Good guess. Not who we're looking for on this occasion, though. Okay, so this now gets thrown over to Beth. Would you like par three or par five for the steal?
Five, please.
Okay. Mm. 2016 US Open playoff winner.
Oh,
I think Gemma knows it now.
16 US Open playoff winner, Brittany Lang.
Correct. You have got the points.
Oh, I should have gone for the par five.
You should have gone for par five.
So now you know.
1 point now I know. To Beth. Okay, Beth, you're a go now. It's a GB and I player. Are we going par three, par four, or par five?
Par three.
Ooh.
This is brave. English sociology student.
Okay. English sociology student. So somebody who is studious. Okay. Let's see. Oh, this is not easy. Don't know.
Okay. Is that a pass then for the...
It is, sorry.
It's a pass. Okay, right, fine. This is where you can come in.
Don't
want
to give too much
away. Gemma. Do you want the par four or the par five?
I'll have the par five. Was this an American or a GB and I?
GB and I.
Okay.
So we've got English sociology student. And now, first pro win in Williamsburg.
Bronte Law?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
you got it. Mm-hmm. Her first professional win came in May 2019 at the Pure Silk Championship in Virginia as part of the LPGA Tour. It's Bronte Law, who's played in three Curtis Cups, 2012, 2014 and 2016. Okay, so now it's 1-1. So here we go, Gemma. It is now your turn. Who is this USA player? Do you want a par three, par four or par five?
Par... five?
Okay. Stepping away at 32.
Oh, Michelle Wee West.
Look at that. It's almost like utter disgust by Beth there. Oh, my God.
This happened to me a few times on the last question when they're very, I don't know, we'll say easy.
I think that was actually hard. I just think that was an excellent, excellent guess from you there, Gemma. Well done. Yes, Michelle Wee West, we've talked about her in this episode. She's the youngest player in the Curtis Cup history when she played in 2004. So you get that point there. Now, Beth, this is, you've got to get this now then.
I know.
It's another American. Do you want par three, par four or par five?
Four.
Pat Hurst's Solheim pick.
Mina Harrigay.
Oh, that was good. Yes, she was a captain's pick for the 2021 Solheim Cup team, which means you have 3 points, Gemma. You have two, which means Beth.
Oh, well done, Beth.
Beth wins.
Oh, I won?
You won, yes.
Yay.
She's so used to hearing she's lost. Look at her. She's like, what? I won?
I know. I'm back in the winner's seat. Yes.
Well done to
you. That was
you.
A good one. I like that quiz.
You see?
Good.
You can come back anytime and play
exactly.
again.
Yeah, I'll just come back for the quiz next time.
That's it. Perfect.
Careful.
Gemma, it's been so lovely having you on here. What's next for you?
Playing in Grand Rapids, Michigan next week. And then got the women's KPMG PGA Championship the next week.
And you're in New Orleans at the moment.
Yes, yeah, just got a place here a few months ago.
So you're based out there most of the time then?
Yeah, yeah. It's been nice to have a base over here and actually have somewhere to go in the off weeks.
Just hanging out on Bourbon Street like all the time.
Yeah, just, you know, every night. Yeah, just going down there for a hurricane.
Yeah. Lovely. Oh, it's been so nice to see you again. Thank you so, so much for coming on. Well done with your efforts on par 3, par 4, par 5 as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Oh, it's
thank
been
you,
really
Gemma.
Good. Beth, it's been lovely to chat to you again. Very nice.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll see you very, very soon as well. Now we're in the same country. We will get a game of golf at some point.
I hope so. I hope it's soon.
Yeah.
Although, I think you should come up here.
I would like that. I am coming up in a few weeks' time, actually. Maybe I'll have to try and arrange. Beth, should just say, you know, Beth did offer to caddy for me, but is conveniently busy on the day that I needed a caddy. So there we go. Remember as well, if you would like, please do subscribe to the Women's Golf Show. You'll be able to hear that full chat between Iona Stephen and Mia Baker next Tuesday. And you can get in touch with us. All you need to do is use the hashtag TWGS. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time to unpick the Curtis Cup and to look ahead to the KPMG Championship as well. We will be talking about you, Gemma. So until then, goodbye.